You were raised to believe the world was black and white. But what if it isn't? What if the rigid belief system you have never questioned is wrong? What if the world is actually a lot more gray? This show is for the seekers, the explorers, those brave enough to step outside of certainty and question everything. Join your hosts as they sit across from the world's leading thought leaders, visionaries, religious gurus, entrepreneurs, philosophers, and more to tackle difficult topics. You don't need all the answers to find meaning in life, but you should be free to ask all the questions. This is Figuring It Out.
In this episode, we break down the cult we were all raised in, discuss what we currently believe, and cover how to start the conversation if you're having doubts yourself. Welcome back to the Figuring It Out podcast. We did take a break for a while, and we've been recording some episodes over the last few weeks just to make sure we stay ahead of the releases this time. And so this episode is our intro episode to say welcome back to the show and build some context for those of you who are new to the show and maybe are tuning in now for the first time. So this is going to be some more introductory things that we want to cover and set the scene for what the show looks like moving forward and what you can expect from us on a weekly basis now. So
now, my favorite thing, I was thinking about this today, is that we started recording episodes like a few weeks ago and you've gotten jacked in like the last couple months. Like you were like morbidly obese when we recorded the first with this.
Right.
So I'm thinking I can release all the episodes backwards and it'll like show you regressing over the course of the show.
Yeah, but then once we catch up, it'll be like a flip. It'll be in 1 week.
But also by that point, I'll be jacked.
Okay.
That's part of the plan. Mm. It's like the long term game plan.
What about me being jacked? Does that not count?
Well, you've always
probably
been
pretty jacked.
Yeah. Yeah, you were always...
I'll
take it.
You were always the sexy
I love that,
addition to the show.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't say that. I love that you just said...
I didn't say that.
I love that you expected a stray right there, where you're like, what about me? And then you braced for us to be mean.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, you already jacked.
We're both just really complimentary. Oh.
I do remember when you started...
That's all
like,
we ever are.
But when you started really working out, I remember one time I came in, I was like, oh my God, look at your biceps. And then I looked at my biceps. I was like, okay, what are you doing?
Well, what are you doing?
Put that back down.
You said something about looking at biceps. So
put that back down. I've always said, though, and nobody ever laughs, but I keep saying it. Like whenever I would do coaching stuff where you'd like send somebody, I'd be like, yeah, I'm like Travis's like chubby stunt double. And they'd always be like, huh.
Just never landed.
Never landed. No one's ever laughed, but I think it's funny.
Well, you know, sometimes that's all comedy is.
So I just said it again now.
Yeah. Hoping that somebody.
And I don't
if
tweak.
If you laughed, please let him.
But I don't tweak the joke to make it better. I just say the exact joke every time.
And to be fair, there was a point where like we both had big beards
like,
and long hair.
Travis is chubby and and has a long beard.
Travis is Travis's chubby stunt double.
So maybe it's funnier now.
I look like my own chubby stunt double. All right.
Anyway.
All right,
so basically kind of informal this first episode, but going forward, we're going to do a lot less interviews. We're going to do a lot more just solo shows, just talking about stuff that we think is relevant and important.
And we're more interesting than the guests typically anyway.
Yeah, mostly.
It's like Josh Peck has something to say about acting.
Yeah. What?
Ed Mylett on finding your purpose.
Yeah.
Like I'm just kidding.
It's like we are
actually maybe Josh Peck.
Well, formally apologizing for the terrible interviews that we put out.
Yeah.
Max Lugavere, what does he know about
nutrition? Max Lugavere on diet?
Okay, Max.
Look at him now versus when he interviewed Max Lugavere.
Yeah. So yeah, moving forward, we're just going to kind of pick a topic and talk about that topic. Just things about philosophy and religion that we find interesting, reacting to certain clips we find on the internet, things like that. But the main purpose of the show is I guess just the overarching concept is that we are not really trying to convince people of the things that we believe. It's more of just trying to push people to go on their own personal journey to start down that, that lifelong adventure for themselves. Because I think that it's a bad case scenario if you just wholesale accept everything that the previous generation told you is true and you never go on your own personal journey, even if you end up at the same conclusions that your parents were at or your pastors or authority figures or whatever where they ended up at, like even if you end up on the same page that they were on, I still think it's important to personalize those things and go on that journey for yourself. And so this show is more just about trying to get people to ask the right questions, be honest with themselves, and figure out life for themselves. That's why it's called the Figuring It Out podcast. It's not from a place of we have figured it out and we're here to tell you what to believe or how to believe it or any of those things. It's more just like we're all constantly figuring this thing out together. And we just want to, there to be a place where you feel comfortable asking those questions, where you're not going to be judged for asking those questions, where you're not going to be shamed for asking those questions. And you can feel like it's a place where you can actually come and meet other people that are going down the same path that you're going down. So that's kind of the idea of the show. So we're going to start off this first episode with just asking a few questions so you guys can get to know us and get to know what we're going to be talking about here on the show first. So number one, I'm going to direct this one to Eric because Eric, you, for those that don't know, Eric hosts. They all know. That's why they're here.
They know.
Eric hosts a show called The Preacher Boys Podcast, which is a show that follows the religious abuse that exists within the Independent Fundamental Baptist cult, which is what we all grew up in. And then there's also a documentary on HBO, which huge congrats to you for that. That came out.
They know.
And that came out in the interim since we stopped releasing episodes. Yeah. On HBO Max, it was top 10 for a couple of weeks.
Number 7, to be exact, in between Selena's cooking show and Megan Thee Stallion's rap shit, which was like my favorite screenshot ever. I was like, I'm somewhere in fame. I'm somewhere between Megan Thee Stallion and Selena Gomez. Like, I'm somewhere in that realm.
Yeah.
They don't know who I am, but I know who they are. And it felt good to be shoulder to shoulder. You know?
Yeah, well, they know who you are. They were like, I can't believe I'm next to Eric, whatever his last name is. Yeah. That's what
it sounds. It is funny because I have a name that like is annoying. But if I ever do become actually famous, they'll be like, oh, it's Eric Skorzynski. It has a very Skorzynski, you know, like Scorsese.
Yeah.
You know, there's something. But for now, it's just like hard to spell.
It's just Eric Skorzynski.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Just start jamming on the keyboard and you'll find it.
The Preacher Boys guy.
Yeah.
Like Eric the, and then they stop. What's his last name?
My favorite is when people just call me Preacher Boy. Mm. Like they don't get the name of the show and they'll be like, what's up, Preacher Boy? And I'm like, whoa.
That's the opposite of my
name. Yeah.
That's not the point. But anyway.
So the question is, what is the IFB? So for those listening, can again have a little bit of context as to how we were all raised. So I'll let you answer this one, Eric, just because you've kind of become like a talking head about this stuff anyway. So. Take it away. What is the IFB?
A wretched hive of scum and villainy. Just kidding. Actually, that's not far off.
That was a little aggressive.
I mean, the easiest way to explain the IFB to somebody is if they're familiar with like the 1950s Norman Rockwell aesthetic of the people in Sunday suits and dresses sitting in a pew. That's kind of the visual. But then if you want to look at the like beliefs, if you've seen the movie Footloose, where it's like, dancing's not allowed. Like, we're going to just really ratchet in and be as like conservative and strict as possible. That's a pretty good picture. So that's usually like the two things people go, oh, it's like Footloose, which I never watched like a week ago. I was like, yeah, they're right.
Yeah.
And if you take just like American evangelicalism, which I think people look at generally as being kind of weird and odd and ratchet that to 11,
You're
pretty much there. But
like, we would not associate with those crowds.
No.
The American evangelicalism, the what we would have called the seeker-sensitive movement, basically.
They're too liberal.
Basically smart marketers.
Yeah.
So, you know, were vilified. Southern Baptists were too liberal for the IFB. Wouldn't associate with anybody. You know, our pastors wouldn't go to meetings that had pastors from other denominations or sects of Baptist. Like, yeah, just...
They were independent fundamental Baptists, so they're independent of any... accountability, really.
Yeah.
But any other denomination, and then fundamentalists
or convention or like governing bodies,
right?
Like each church operates quote unquote independently,
which is funny because I talked to someone who's an advocate in the SBC world, and it's like, this is like a total sidetrack, but it was really funny because I was sitting there going, in the advocacy world for the Independent Fundamental Baptists, the biggest complaint among survivors of abuse in that denomination is that there's not accountability and structure and organization. And then the biggest thing that's allowing abuse to continue in the SBC is all of those things where it's like there's a network of churches. So I was like, it's just funny that there's like two major problems with very different like propulsion behind them. But anyway, and then fundamentalist is like they hold to a very literal interpretation of scripture, which even now saying that, I'm like, scripture is very clear on these things is like just not true.
Yeah.
But then beyond that, fundamentalism is like, what did our church look like based on a couple of select dudes who ran big churches in our movement in the 1950s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. Like, it's really just rooted in keeping tradition, the brand alive, not necessarily like biblical scholarship and like, what does this text really mean? Yeah. It's like, what did this pastor say it meant? Let's hold that standard forever.
And while we're talking about it, do you know the dictionary definition of a cult?
I mean, the dictionary definition of a cult is it's a group of people devoted to.
I was going to say, I guess we could just look it up.
Yeah, I'll just look. It's a group of people with like extreme devotion. Because I remember the first time I looked it up. Yeah. A system of religious veneration and devotion directed toward a particular figure. So when I first looked that up, I was like, that's every religion.
Basically all religion.
And then I was like, I might have put a pin in that. And then, so that's the actual definition, which is very broad. And cults aren't necessarily bad in general.
Yeah.
Stephen Hassan, who's like one of the foremost cult experts, is a co-author on a book called The Cult of Apple. And he's like, I'm in the cult of Apple. I've bought nothing but Apple products. I bought everything they've ever released.
Yeah.
So there can be healthy things. I think the more important is describing like high control groups, which then Stephen Hassan has the BITE model, which is behavior control, information control, thought control, and emotional control. And so I think if you want to get like a really baseline definition, is it an environment in which you're free to ask questions without getting pushback? Is it a group that you're free to leave if it's not working for you and still maintain relationships? Like, there's a long list
somewhere where you can seek a variety of information from different sources without being vilified for it.
Right. And so there's a long laundry list of things that would make you a cult. But I think just the word cult tends to shut down conversation quickly.
Sure. Yeah.
If you start saying, hey, are you free to ask questions? And they say, yeah. And you say, are you free to ask questions about every topic? No. You start going, okay, this is a high control group, not a healthy organization that allows freedom of thought, expression, and belief.
I just asked that because, you know, we started this off by saying like we're in a cult, and some of that's just because we're creating content and we want people to listen, and that might be something that hooks them in. But
and
also
it's true.
But also it is technically true, because it does check off a lot of those cult boxes. But like you said, I typically use the word bubble when I describe it, just because, you know, it's not super helpful to use the word cult, because it is one of those like kind of triggering words. And if you're still in that world, it's not going to be something that resonates with you, and you're immediately going to just discount everything else that we have to say.
Yeah.
But I did want to bring that up just because I don't want to just like skate past it. And I would never let myself, I couldn't bring myself to call it a cult for a really long time. And then we were doing this show, one of our first episodes with Calvin Wayman. And, you know, if you haven't listened to the episode, Calvin grew up in a cult, like in a fundamentalist Mormon cult in Southern Utah. He has 44 brothers and sisters and four moms. So there was a polygamist cult that he grew up in, like on a compound with all of his siblings and stuff like that. And so when I remember having that conversation with him, and offline, we were talking one time, I was like, yeah, I just can't bring to, I was like, I can't bring myself to call what I grew up in a cult, because I look at your story and I'm like, I mean, I didn't grow up like that. Like, that's wild. And Calvin goes, that's so funny you say that, because I can't bring myself to call what I grew up in a cult either. And I was like, oh, well, clearly what you grew up in was a cult. You know what I mean? So it was
if
just one of those weird moments.
44 siblings, you're either in a cult or you're one of Nick Cannon's kids. Like, you're one of the two, somewhere in there.
So yeah, that was kind of like a, you know, ironically, a come to Jesus moment.
Yeah.
Where I was just like, oh, well, you know, maybe there's just something that's, you know, a psychological aversion to not wanting to call this thing what it is ultimately. But yeah, it's fairly clear now looking back, just by looking at all these different markers and standards, that like, yeah, it was pretty culty. You know?
Well, and I think there's two reasons. One, aside from offending people that are still in that you like, you know, which my list of those people is very small at this point, but there's that. And then I think also the reason I think we struggle with it, I think even the reason, like, especially parents who put their kids in those systems struggle with it, is that to identify it as not being what you thought it was is to admit that maybe you wasted a lot of time.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes like that's like the big aversion. You know, I was talking to someone today. Hey, I'll plug their book really quick. But I was talking to Krista Brown, who has been an advocate in the SBC world forever. And she talks about her childhood, and she's like, I was a good Christian kid. I believed all this stuff. It was, you know, I checked all these boxes. And she said, now I look back with disdain at much of that time, because I know what I know now. And we were kind of talking about like, you're nostalgic for a past that wasn't real. Mm-hmm. And it can be very hard processing that, like the older you get, to go, oh, I believe this. And it was positive for me at that time.
Yeah.
But there was all this sinister web around it that's like not good. You know, it's kind of crushing to be like retroactively going, oh, this wasn't what I thought it was at all. You know?
So along those lines, let's move into the second question here. And we'll start with Jackie, Miss Chatty Jackie over here, just hogging the mic this whole episode. What is the dumbest rule that you can remember from growing up?
Gonna have to say wearing nylons and pee. It's the win. It's pretty terrible. I don't know why. It was really annoying because then as soon as we were done, we could take them off. I know that like nylons, which again, I feel like...
Wait, you didn't have to wear nylons after PE?
No, you couldn't take them off at all.
Oh, I think you just said you could.
Yeah, you had to wear them during PE.
But you...
No, they got rid of the rule right after.
Oh.
Which was one of those things that like...
I was
again,
like, that's super weird.
No.
Yeah.
Only nylons for PE.
Only when you're doing physical
activity. Only
like
heels
PE. There are
PE.
A lot of things I've learned, like at least for me in the IFB, like they held to like a lot of like just in history, like, even I think we talked about this, of like the Marines just dropped the law.
Yeah.
For girls to wear nylons. So I know it was just like an older thing to do. But again, it like during the time it was taught to us, it was like something that was like needed to be done. And it was like, hey, but like why?
It was like
and
it was disgusting. The pinnacle of modesty as well.
Yeah. And like, but like why? Because we could wear, again, it was one of those things I feel like it was a rule just to be a rule and just to like make a rule for you. And authorities didn't want to like change it. And it was so irritating. Because especially it was like, I think it was either the last period or the second to last period. So we would have had to go to one period without nylons on or put them back on. But like they wouldn't let us take them off. So we had to wear them with culottes. Like it was just like, and it was disgusting.
What do...
That is disgusting.
Okay. I'm
gross.
Ignorant. What do nylons even do? Because to me, they just make your legs look shinier.
It just covers, it's the covering your skin.
But it's skin colored. I never understood nylons because I was like, it's just extra a layer of skin.
Again, I think that's, it's like, it's a performance thing. Like that's why like all like, even well, like does Piper not wear them for dance? Like a lot of dance teams make them wear them and stuff. And so I think it's more of like a performance thing of how they look. But I don't think it has anything to do with modesty at all. I think it was just like from back in the day, like women who wore dresses,
just
shirts,
an unquestioned
they always
thing
wore them.
Do.
Yeah. So it's one of those things that like they made it a rule.
You missed petticoats by like this much. You're like corsets and petticoats if you went back like
the
10
worst,
more years.
Man. But then, Christine Sisson got them taken out like the year after we graduated. I was so irritated.
It's kind of like guys' haircuts.
Yeah.
You know, getting in trouble.
Well,
in college. In college, I got in trouble because, the thing is I wasn't breaking any rules.
Just look worldly.
But yeah, exactly. Well, one of the deans like pulled me aside, like sophomore year, junior year or something, and said something about like some shoes that I was wearing or whatever.
Overweight.
But more or less was talking about like my overall look, and he just goes and he said something about my hair, and I was following all the rules. Like my hair was off my ears, it was cut, it was clean cut, but it was something similar to how it's done right now. It's like a faux hawk or something like that, and he just goes like, well, it's not the leader look. That's not the leader.
It's
look,
like Travis. So subjective.
Yeah, he was just like, if I was a pastor, and I was coming on campus, and I was looking to hire somebody. He's like, and I saw you coming through the door. It's like I wouldn't hire you. I wouldn't hire you because you don't have the leader look. And it's like basically what you mean by that is you want me to have a comb over, like that there. I'm not breaking any of the rules in the rule book. It's just that you don't like how my hair's done because it's like the 2000s, and you were raised in the 1960s.
Right.
Like this doesn't. This doesn't translate. And frankly, if you weren't going to hire me based on my haircut, I would not want to work for you.
Right. Yeah.
Well, did you say that, Travis?
I don't remember what I said.
He said, sir.
I don't think so. No. I was fairly sarcastic even at that point. Especially, I was a rule follower except for when it didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And then I would push back and a lot of authority did not like me because of that. No. Because the pushback was only when it made sense. So like they didn't have anything to say back because it was like, I want to be a good kid. Like I wasn't like a rebel or anything. Mm. It was just like, if stuff doesn't make sense, I'll ask about it.
Yeah.
And then that was obviously just never okay. So it was immediately met with this attitude is bad. And like, you're a rotten apple because like you're, you know, putting on this facade that you're good, but really you have this evil part of you that's like rebellious and all this other stuff. And I was just like, I just want to know why you're insisting that this was the correct answer on the test when it clearly from the textbook is not the correct answer on the test. And you're not willing to just admit that you were wrong for a fucking second.
Yeah.
Like, that's not me. That's you. Man. Yeah. Like, that's on you.
I can't stand when people question intent. Like to this day, I was just telling you guys in your kitchen very loudly. Like I don't like when people say, Like, because of you guys, but I was recalling a story of something else that happened recently. And I hate when people assume the worst possible intent.
Yeah.
And so like, if I know my intent's right and that comes into question, like, I'll lose my fucking mind.
That was one of the best parts of The Four Agreements to me, by Don Miguel Ruiz, which is a great book. For anybody that's going through like a philosophical questioning or whatever phase, I always recommend a couple of books, and that's one of them.
I've never heard you recommend that book in my entire life. So
really?
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks for the shout out.
I know. Rude.
Maybe I don't always do that.
Only to people that will understand.
I always do it.
For the intellectual crowd.
But one of the four agreements is don't make assumptions. And like, when you first, if you just go through the four agreements and you read the title section, like the chapter titles, you're like, these are kind of basic. Why is everything dependent on these? But when they go through it and explain, obviously it makes a lot more sense. But making assumptions is one of those things, and you see it constantly pop up throughout. And that's one of those times where people just make like craziest assumptions without knowing who you are.
Ultimate certainty.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, that's huge. Dumbest
rule. Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. I will say with that, with the nylon thing, I've realized retroactively now as a parent, like you mentioned, like how concerned they were with appearances was so weird.
Yeah.
And like, again, it's subjective, but also like inappropriate in a lot of ways too. Cause like, I know like all the rules I've heard of like, oh, if your hair's wet, people are thinking of you taking a shower, like all that kind of weird stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, that's weird for a professor to tell a girl at college.
That only reflects what you're thinking.
But recently, one of the things I realized was like super over the line was my youth pastor. I remember in front of our class, one of the girls in our class would always, again, following the rules, but she would wear, we didn't have the nylon rule, but she would wear, it wasn't against the rule. She would wear like these like nylons, but they were like black. Like they were more like the pattern nylons.
Oh, we weren't allowed to wear
them. And then she wore like,
she was wearing some fishnets, huh?
Basically, yeah. But then it was like with some kind of shoe. I forget what. I only know basic category of shoes. Anyway, some kind of shoe. And I remember in front of the class, he said, like, you look like a street walker. And I think about that now.
Oh my God.
I think about that now for like a 30-year-old youth pastor and teacher to tell like a 15 or 16-year-old girl, like, you look like a street walker in front of our entire class is so inappropriate. And if that was my daughter,
tells you exactly where his mind was.
Well, yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. And then dude, if that was your kid and they came home and said that, oh fuck.
Well, our pastor,
we'd be having more than just a conversation.
Literally told Stephanie, cause she had an ankle bracelet on that.
Your sister, Stephanie.
Yes. My sister,
for those listening.
Yeah. That was the appearance of a harlot, cause she had an ankle bracelet.
But see, that sounds crazy.
13, 14.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very wild. An ankle brace.
Yeah.
What? This wasn't a rule for me. I actually thought about that too. I know a pastor that would not let his daughters wear a seatbelt because it drew attention to their
breasts. Heard that.
So would not.
And you probably know the pastor that she's referring to.
Yeah, probably.
He was kind of known for saying perverted things all the time from the pulpit and harping on perverted topics.
He wrote a whole book on marriage too. Real intimate book on marriage.
You get three guesses.
Wait, is it someone Baptist?
Yeah.
That wrote a book on marriage.
He actually recently passed away.
Wow. That wrote a book. Were they IFB?
Mm-hmm.
They wrote a book on marriage.
Harped on purity all the time.
All the time. He spoke at like lots of teens. Yeah.
Gonna be more specific. And they're not
Oregon.
Dead? Or they
no,
are
they
dead.
Are dead. They just passed away not long ago.
He wasn't old, though. He was the pastor of one of her churches that she went to.
Yeah.
Well, before you started going there, though. Or was he your pastor?
He was our pastor.
Oh, okay.
Calvinist.
Oh, I
wouldn't know who Pastor Calvinist is?
I know it from you saying it, but I don't know. They don't come.
Oh, really?
In my name. I know them from
pull some stuff from his marriage book. That'd probably be pretty funny.
Oh, yeah.
I'd have to check that out. Yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have guessed that.
Yeah.
I can think of a lot of people alive that say really dumb stuff about that. what is crazy? Sorry. Last thing. Sorry. But I just put out a thing asking about like how purity culture, which is really where all these rules come from.
Actually, yeah.
I had like 200 responses like by the end of like the day. And I was like, holy cow.
Like how purity culture negatively affected
you.
Did you read
through that list of life? It's crazy. You'd like it.
Because you're not subscribed to his newsletter like a good friend would be.
It was like seven. So I put it in a Google Doc just to like run Grammarly through it to fix grammar from people's comments. I just copy pasted everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like seven pages on Google of like just. So I just released it because I was like, well, I'll cover the three that respond on the episode.
Yeah.
There was like way too many. So I was like, just read. It's gnarly, really? But there's a lot of stuff about like oh, I felt this way. It affected me, you know, all that kind of stuff. But
well, it's weird how much it affected people differently, too, because I've had that conversation with my sister a lot because she was like, no, but like, I never struggled with that after I got married because like, I was fine. I'm like, but like, you were conditioned to think that your whole life that it wasn't. Right. Like, how did you just flip a switch? Like, I think it's like, she doesn't understand that at all.
Yeah.
Like, for me, it was the complete opposite. Like, well, you, the first day of our marriage, you were like freaked out the next day because you felt so guilty. And I'm like, I don't know. It is weird how it affects each person differently.
Yeah.
Even with like the same set of standard and rules that you were.
Really, I was just like, I can't believe I just got married just so I could have sex.
That's, but that, it, but we talked.
Thanks.
No, but in a.
And it worked out for you.
Knee slapper.
But the truth is though, if you really think about it, that is why everybody gets married in that world, because there's no change to otherwise degree, to your relationship, sure. Except for the fact that now we can.
Yeah.
Well, not even, but it wasn't even like
spend
sex.
Time
yeah,
together
I was
going
to say, it was just that you actually got to be together. It it wasn't even just a sex
so
part.
So it's
just
getting married to date.
Yeah.
Is the whole thing.
Yes, like,
we can go to a coffee shop together. Huh? Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
like that is, weird to think about that.
That's,
way.
Anyway. It's wild. Okay. So. Eric, dumbest rule.
I mean, for me, it's just personal. I just take this really heavily. I actually told my dad this again. I was like, the only thing I can't forgive you for, which isn't true. I mean, there's other things, but the main thing.
Movies.
Yeah. I like not going to movie theaters. And the thing that bothers me the most about it is I grew up in like, I was at the perfect age for the Star Wars prequels to come out.
Yeah.
And the fact that Star Wars Episode 6 came out when I was in sixth grade and I was like literally all my friends. Like,
wait, you mean Episode 3?
What did I say? Oh, Episode 3.
Yeah.
I'm really old.
like 1984.
But episode 3 came out in 2006. So I was born in 95. So I was like 11 years old.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, to be a Star Wars fan and all your friends are like, my parents are taking me opening night.
Yeah.
You've got the, like, I had all the merch for the movie. And then back in the day.
Like the lightsaber cereal
spoons.
Oh
my God, dude. I had everything. The Cheez-It poster where you mail and buy, like, I had all of it, and I remember sitting there.
Hey.
But all that stuff, I need to add an effect to that later. No, I had everything. And then back in that time, which I'm like always, I always tell Piper, I'm like, dude, when your movie comes out in theaters and you want to watch it at home, it's out the next week. It was like six months.
Yeah, oh, totally.
And then you have to wait for it to come into Hollywood Video on DVD, and then you have to rent it.
Especially for the ones that did really well, because they stay in theaters for 4 months.
So like now it's like the better it does in theaters, the quicker they push it
to
digital.
You gotta wait till it comes out to Blockbuster.
And so anyway, so I ended up seeing it like 6 months later. Everyone's already spoiled it. They're like, Anakin's Darth Vader. And you're like, ah, fuck, you know? I already knew that. But
everybody knew.
But, you know, it was really frustrating, you know, and I still get mad about it because I have to go back now and wait like, oh, it's the 20th anniversary. I can watch it in theaters.
Do you remember the
now.
First movie that you actually watched in theaters in?
2013, the remake of Evil Dead. I went That's so hilarious. Hard. And I literally, it was the moment where I was like, whoa. Because I told my dad, I was like, because I would, every movie that came out, I made a big deal about
like,
it.
Like you were like a senior?
Yeah. I had turned in and every movie that came out, I would just whine about it. I'd be like, yeah, that looks really cool, you know, to everything. And then I remember when the Evil Dead remake came out, I was like, yeah, that'd be really cool to go see that. And then my dad was like, well, you turn, because it came out in like March. I think it was right on my birthday or right around it. He's like, well, you turn 18. He's like, so, which is a weird thing in the fundamentalist world for my dad to even say that.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, really? Deuces. Yeah. And then I went to go see it. But that was, for how much I missed, that was like one of the coolest first movies, because it was like the full jam-packed local theater, all the people yelling at the screen, like, don't go in there. It was cool. Yeah, it was cool. The funniest thing is, I love horror, but I also can get spooked.
You love horror?
Horror.
You love horror.
Anyway, I remember we had to park like 3 blocks away from the theater. And I remember we were both kind of like walking a little faster, leaving the theater because it spooked us. But anyway.
What, you and your dad?
No, my dad didn't go.
Oh, so I was like, who did you?
He didn't go to movies for another couple of years. No, my friend from school. We were both like, that was great. Back to
run back.
Let's go.
That's what's crazy is like how scandalous it was to go to the movie
theater. Well, in college, didn't you? On tour.
Oh, yeah. On tour. When I was in a gospel men's quartet singing across the country,
that's
recruiting kids to college. So like most churches, if you can believe it, in the IFB don't have a lot of money. And so they would just put you up in whatever shithole they had
sometimes
to put you
in
up
the church.
A lot of times in the church. There was one time
I slept in a classroom on an inflatable pool float there for basketball camp.
That's what I'm talking about. So we're in college, like, you know, being a blessing to ministries or whatever. And this one church put us up in their church balcony and we didn't get any bedding. So they had towels in the bathroom for us.
That's so funny.
So we just like slept. I have a picture of me somewhere with like four hand towels just placed in different parts of my body for my blanket that evening. But anyway, there this other church put us up in just houses from like church family members. And it was me and another guy on tour, and we were staying with some like old couple, and they were totally nice and made us some dinner and everything, and we were going to bed. And then I was just like, I think it was Batman that just came out, like The Dark Knight or The Dark Knight Rises or something like that. And I was like,
God, you're so old.
I was like, we should go see that. Are you looking up when it came out?
I was in, hold on. See, this is weird because I don't feel like you're much older than me. 2008.
Oh, then no.
So maybe that, Dark Knight Rises?
Yeah, when did Dark Knight Rises
we were
come
in college.
2012.
2012. Whatever.
Okay, but see, I was in 11th grade when that came out.
Dark Knight Rises.
It's so weird what a difference a couple of years makes.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, I was in college. And yeah. I was like, Mom and Dad, please let me go see the Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah, so I, there was a movie theater like a mile or two from this house that we were staying at. And so me and this guy, we like snuck out of the house that we got put up in. And we ran all the way to the movie theater. It was like 2 miles away.
That's not far.
We barely got there on time because we ran the whole thing and we weren't expect, like, we were looking to maybe like, this was before Uber. So it was like, how do we get there? You know? So we like run there and we watched a movie, super nervous and scared the whole time. We didn't tell anybody until like months.
Which is the optimal viewing experience for a movie.
Because you can literally just get kicked off of tour. Like, yeah, they'll just kick you off a tour if you get caught doing stuff like that, which is so wild to say. It's not like we were sneaking out and going to a strip club. Or like going to a bar and getting drunk or something like that. We were literally just going to watch Batman.
That's a whole other episode. Yeah, I've heard some stories of some crazy.
But that's what I'm saying. It's like, this is not a wild story. But at the time, like, I remember telling people and being like, it was crazy. Like, we snuck out. And we like went to watch Batman. It's like, oh, did you drink? Like, no, we just had popcorn. Yeah. I drank a Sprite.
I had to get the smell of butter off my breath when I got back to the back to the room.
So then we leave and we're like, we don't want to run 2 miles back. So there's the only time in my life I've ever hitchhiked. So we're like walking out of the movie theater. It's like 11:30 p.m. and I just like stuck my thumb out and some guy picked us up and drove us back to the house like 2 miles down the road. That was the only time in my life I ever hitchhiked was when I snuck out of a house to go watch Batman.
You're just so badass, dude. You're so cool.
It was pretty sick, man.
Yeah, dude. I could do a whole episode about sketchy places I stayed. Like filming church video. Like the worst place I ever stayed was in. This is so specific. So you can guess one of three people I filmed with. It wasn't them. Okay. And it wasn't them.
Okay.
Or it wasn't them too. It was somebody else. Okay. Then whoever you're thinking. If you're listening, it's not about you.
Yeah.
It's about someone else. But anyway, this one, they put me, the church owned a like abandoned hotel/apartment complex.
Yeah.
And they would put staff in it.
As you do.
And I had to stay with some guy from the school and church. And then, but there was like literally like, I went in to brush my teeth and there was like literally just a trail of ants just going up all the way over the ceiling. And like, it was very run down. And I got so sick after I stayed there. It was like, that was like the worst. I got like a weird feverish. It was kind of like the, you know, the Avenue K dorm.
Oh, yeah.
That's literally
West Coast,
what I thought about. Yeah.
I'm familiar.
Which I also, we all got, our entire team had like 102 degree fevers when we got back. It was like a massive illness.
Yeah.
But also there was like one working toilet and like a half-eaten apple in the toilet,
and the roof was,
and toenail
off.
Clippings on the floor. Yeah. It was disgusting. Anyway, what
yeah,
we...
it was wild how they
so
let that place exist.
So that's point. Weird... Oh yeah, what's your dumbest?
Oh yeah, yeah. And real quick before we move off that topic, there was one. There's just one. Okay,
you got it started.
This pastor. It was his house, so he was out of town, and we sang at their church. And of course it's one of those like churches that has like 34 people in attendance and like 17 of them are
his
the family of the staff members. He was like, oh yeah, you're gonna stay at pastor's house since he's out of town. You can stay there. It was filthy. this guy's house. It was insane. They're like, please don't go upstairs. Please don't go upstairs. It's where the kids' bedrooms are upstairs. So like, what do? Of course we go upstairs because the rest of the house is gross. Like I'm talking like the downstairs bathroom, like the bathtub was full of just random shit and junk.
Like hoarder house.
Yeah, yeah. No, and it was like the sink was filthy. It was one of those sinks like where you wash your hands, but even though you just wash your hands, you still feel like you have
like
shit.
I need sanitizer out of the bag after.
Yeah. So we go upstairs and it's like, oh, no wonder you didn't want us to go upstairs because you can't walk anywhere because there's stuff all over the floor. Like it was the most mind blowing experience because first of all, how do you live like that? Yeah. Second of all, you know you're putting people up in your house.
Yeah. Maybe he was hoping you'd feel a call to clean.
Like, what are you doing, man? Like it was so wild to me. But anyway, there's so many places that we were put up. It's like if you got put up in a hotel, it was like, thank God. Yeah. Although half the time it was a hotel that you would rather just be sleeping on the floor outside.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But anyway, but the dumbest rule. Okay, so for me, I don't know if this is the dumbest one, but just the thing that was annoying to me was shaving every day, yeah. Especially in college. Like, in high school, I kind of get it because you don't want kids walking around like just looking really scraggly, and like, you know, a lot of kids in high school can't grow real facial hair, and so they just have like random patches, and it just looks
the
gross.
Reason that high schoolers look scraggly is not because their beard. It's just everything.
Yeah, but that
you already
that
look
contributes.
Yeah,
to
sure,
it,
sure,
though,
sure.
You know, and I can understand. But like when you get to college, it's like I'm an adult. Like, does it really matter if I shave or not? And there was one time where one of the teachers, could get demerits in college, which is also wild. I didn't realize that was not something that was normal until after we left. And I would say it to people, and they're like, "Wait, what's a demerit?"
I found out last year that wasn't like a super big
thing.
Yeah,
you found out on this show. We were recording one
coming
time.
Soon.
Yeah, like yeah. It turns out not everybody gets demerits at all, and definitely not in college. But anyway, I got she gave me demerits for like not shaving, but I shaved that morning, and she goes, "Well, why don't you just start bringing your razor with you to school, and you can shave after third period every day?" And I was like, "No, I'll take the demerits. That's ridiculous." It was just one of those. And I got razor burn really bad, especially from the electric razors, you know? So like I hated shaving every
day. I had such sensitive skin.
What's that?
I had super sensitive skin. Well,
especially my neck. And it was always the areas where your beard is the thickest. So my neck is like always really thick. And so it would just like, yeah, I would just have really bad razor burn, but like you still have to shave the next morning. It's just like shaving on razor burn is just the worst.
And so, he shaved right before this episode.
I literally shaved like right before we recorded.
All right.
But yeah, that was one of the dumb rules, especially
number three.
In college. What sin brought you the most guilt?
Travis.
Nice.
Yeah. I laid on the guilt.
Yeah.
And I just remember after our first date when we snuck to the movie theaters, actually. And I remember calling you on the way home, being like, "I promised I've only ever kissed one other guy. I'm not this type of girl."
That's true.
Which is. in that movement, kissing one other guy makes you that type of girl. Yeah. I hate to break it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I've kissed two.
It was in the girls' bathroom in the main auditorium.
Okay,
she
don't give away all my secrets.
was that really what brought you the most guilt, though?
Smooching?
That type of stuff? Or was it more?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Eric?
Okay.
I think for every single guy in the entire, it was like lust was sin. But I mean, like the thing that bothers me, I've said this a billion times, probably said it when we first recorded this, is like what bothers me is that the amount of guilt I felt every day was so disproportionate to the amount of bad that I was doing. So like, that's the thing is like, there were things that like, if I had a teenage son, I'd be like, "Hey, don't do these things," or like, "Hey, this isn't the best use of time," but it's like, you know, but
wait,
it's
what's not the best use,
you know, no, but it's like one of the, but even then it's like, there was so much shame about just like finding, it was such a weird environment where it was like, they pushed you so heavily to be a heterosexual, sex driven male. Like this archetype of like,
yeah,
I want to be this alpha. And then like this promise of like, when you get married, you're going to have like this, like amazing basically human sex toy for you to use,
which
is the exact wording of what they basically said is you can use them, which is not healthy either. But then it's like,
well,
beyond, no, but it's like beyond that, it's like,
no,
it's also so villainized where it's like, you shouldn't, like basically it was like, sex is awesome. Don't have it. and don't think about it and yeah. don't ask about it. But also that's your ultimate goal
yeah.
is to find a girl in college, like in 2 years, which yeah. is why you're picking a college, because the ratio is 4 to 1. So your yeah. odds of getting a girl.
So weird. It's, to look back.
It was so weird. So I was like, they were stoking up all of this desire for this thing that you can't have.
That you can't act on.
It's,
and if you yeah. do act on it, it's like.
Right. And you can't so ask
guilt,
about it.
So much shame.
Which then is like, it pushes you to secrecy, which then you're getting all your information from unhealthy sources too about what that looks like. And
right.
it's just such a nasty, horrible realm. And again, the fact that I felt so guilty for just being a human being.
Yeah. Right.
is right. so weird,
yeah. right?
You know?
Yeah.
And the fact that like
this show is brought to you by BetterHelp. It's a new year, which means it's time to write a new chapter of your life. And if you're someone like me, maybe the last couple of chapters have been a little bit rough here and there. Maybe it's time to finally experience a new plot twist, or maybe there's a part of your story you've been wanting to revise. Well, it's not going to happen just because you made a resolution that's going to fade by February. It's about picking up the pen and becoming the author of your own life. And I want to encourage you to think of therapy as your editorial partner, helping you write new chapters and create the meaningful story you deserve to live. Starting therapy with BetterHelp did just that for me. I was going through some of the biggest transition periods and toughest moments since starting this podcast, and having a therapist to bounce ideas off of and get the tools I need to live a better, more fulfilled life was so incredibly invaluable. It's not about just getting their system and their philosophy that you plug yourself into. It's about having an open dialogue and finding out what steps are best for you in your specific journey. I know my specific journey is extremely busy, and so that's why it's helpful that BetterHelp is fully online. It makes therapy affordable and convenient, and they serve over 5 million people worldwide. And the best part is they have over 30,000 credentialed therapists with a wide range of specialties to choose from, and you can easily switch therapists anytime at no extra cost. The first therapist I sat down with was not a good fit for me and my needs, and I went in the next day and scheduled an appointment with a different therapist who ended up being an absolute game changer for me. You can start writing your own story today with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/preacherboys today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/preacherboys. Get 10% off your first month right now with BetterHelp. It's time to write your story.
Again, your youth pastor can be like, she looks like a streetwalker. And then it's like also like, but don't sexualize your classmates. Yeah. And it's like,
right.
What are we doing? Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. this
How
is
do I
mixed messages, yeah. you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, why we obviously didn't have dances, and there's no touching, there's no kissing, there's no, you know, we're taking our son to his school orientation. He's going to kindergarten, you know.
I thought you were going to say school dance. I was like, they do dances for kindergarten? That well, would actually be so cute.
Well, what
that would be adorable.
What actually. The guy was saying was that they have like, well, he said they have like a dance class or something
a
like
social
that.
Oh. A social class. They require everybody to take.
Yeah, but they require kids to do it because they're just like the social, the exercise of like going up to people of the opposite sex and talking to them and dancing with them is like so good for their social, you know, construction yeah. or whatever development. And it was just like, oh, that's what healthy, like, you know,
instead of villainizing everyone like. Who doesn't yeah. look like you.
Yeah. yeah. Or being like, you're not only is this bad, but you're never allowed to touch the opposite gender until you're married. Like until you're married. Yeah. Like yeah. we were not allowed to touch in college.
Yeah.
When we were engaged to yeah. be married, yeah. we were going to be married and we were not allowed to touch yeah. in college. Like as adults that yeah. were
and
about even, to be married to each other, we couldn't
well,
touch.
And even
at
a wedding,
especially
they're
not
like, don't kiss too
yeah.
long.
Yeah. Well, and right. there's also like, I think about that too, that like some people don't realize too, is then you get married. And that's why I think so many marriages struggle so much in the beginning. It's like, okay, but now you're supposed to know how to do everything.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah.
And like,
well, someone said that responding to that question I'd ask about purity culture. And they're like, you were supposed to be, I forget the exact wording, but they basically said, you're supposed to be as modest as possible and as pure as possible, but also as slutty as possible, but only for your husband. Like it's yep. such a weird yeah.
well, and they tell
things.
You not to move. That was a big thing for us. I'm like, you're not allowed to move your body at all the entire time growing up. But then yeah, then your wedding night, but like now like figure it out and like
yeah,
be like
now you're
the
supposed
sex
to be
goddess.
Sexy.
Yeah. And it's just like, I've had
I always
like
you always
friends,
say
like,
sex
really
goddess. That's such a funny.
Yeah.
Did someone say that or was it just,
I don't know.
Or is it just your own thing? Know. Yeah. You always say sex.
That's how she identifies now.
That's just how I do.
You're like, that's just me.
Yeah.
Just
who I was born to be.
I just have like several friends who like really struggle with that. Yeah. And I did too. Like where it's just like, cause then you feel so awkward and then like you, and then you just don't do anything.
Well,
and
how many
you
people,
something's wrong with you. And
how many people like weddings do you go to in that world where like you knew their kiss on stage was their first kiss ever, you know? And it was just
in front of an
so
audience.
So bad to watch, you know? But like there was one in particular, I'm not gonna throw him under the bus, but there was one in particular where it just like looked like she just was so scared where like he went, was from Hitch when he's like, he said, I go 90, you come 10, you don't go the whole 100 or something like that, you know?
And they're going 1,000.
And like that guy was like going 130 and she was like leaning back, just like ready to just
terrified.
Just like, okay.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Like the girl who locked him in the bathroom.
We did it. Like, now I pronounce you man and wife. And I was like,
good luck.
Unpronounce them real quick. Yeah. Because that was so awkward.
Yeah.
But not really to their own fault, you know, they were just doing what everybody told them to do.
Again,
and they're 20 years
one,
old getting married.
Horrible way of looking at marriage from day one.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I'm just sure we'll the do. Dumbest reasons
we haven't done an episode on the effects of that yet, but that's a whole other episode of just fuckery.
Well, just, you know, friends that got divorced 2 years after they got married because they were counseled to get married because they were caught having sex or something like that. And it's like,
well, the verse,
that's smart. They didn't even have a kid.
It's the verse of it's better to be married than to burn in your lust or whatever. And it's bro, that's the only reason you're getting married.
Yeah. You
should burn a little bit.
Just burn.
Exactly. Better to burn.
Okay, so I think that's fairly universal is that brought the most guilt. It definitely was, like, of all the, you know, sins. Like,
it was, the most horrible sin you could do.
And it was the one that, like, you couldn't avoid having a desire for.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, growing up, it was, like, I didn't think about drinking that much. I didn't think about cussing that much. I didn't think about, like, listening to bad music wasn't, like, a major temptation for me. It was just, like... There was just a bunch of stuff that I had control over my ability to say no or whatever. And it's just like, that was one that was just like a constant, continuous, overwhelming desire that I felt so sinful for even having.
Yeah.
And that's the wild thing is like, it's so natural and so like unavoidable.
Right.
And the fact that you're like made to feel that terribly about it for so long. When you're already going through all the struggles of learning how to cope with what's happening to your changing body at that time, it's just like, well, this is not helping the situation.
You have to like chain up that inner sex goddess.
Yeah, just.
I remember I would be there late. I'm like, God, please, my inner sex goddess is just fighting to get out. I just never know. I noticed you say that.
That is funny. I never noticed.
You always say that. Yeah. Hey.
And dear me.
Dear me. And he used to say praise be all the time because of Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, which they haven't aired one in a minute.
Well, what was funny is that she would say it in like...
Forget your Handmaid's Tale.
She would say it in like sarcastic religious contexts where she would just be like, praise be. I'm like, Jackie, you don't have to use the reference from a cultural cult thing that most people would use because they didn't grow up the way... Like you could just say stuff that we used to say. Like, why are you quoting? You know
because
what I mean?
It was
like
funnier.
I like it.
It was just such a. I was like,
well, because you haven't watched the show. If you watched the show, and then you would. So
well, all right.
You actually probably like the show. You should watch
totally.
The show.
No, yeah, I definitely will.
Did you watch it? Didn't you?
I haven't seen it.
Really?
But I love your references to it. My favorite
you
references are ones that
you explain the reference. I watched an episode and I understand the reference. I'm just saying, like, it was always. It's just it struck me as odd because like that would. If somebody didn't grow up the way that we grew up, like that would be their context into what somebody would say if they're being sarcastic about something religious. So it was just funny that like you would like you adopted what they said instead of just saying one of the random trite phrases that we used to say all the time.
I think it's because it was more of like because it's in the context of how we were raised. So
most people would understand that more than ours.
Yeah.
I see both sides.
This was funny to me. That's all.
Yeah. And I'd say blessed be the fruit.
I know. May the Lord open.
May the Lord open is something.
Also, they literally had to say to each other every time they saw like the handmaid saw another handmaid because that's like was their job was to bear children. So they would always greet each other with blessed be the fruit. And then the other one would reply, may the Lord open.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Yeah. Amen, Brother Parker right there.
Let's get back to that.
All right.
Anyways.
Okay. Tell us about the experience that made you start asking questions.
Let's give the too long don't read version of this for ourselves. Because I'm sure we'll get into long detail.
Okay, so for me, it was when I was wanting you to watch The Case for Christ.
Hmm.
That was, again, my like insight into the fact of, like, I always say
not knowing that I had already read it. Or watched it, I mean.
You did already watch it? I don't know that.
That was when I had already read the book.
Oh, no, it was more for me of just like you asking me the questions, be like, okay, I'll fine, that's, but like, what is like your answer to the questions, and me realizing I didn't have the answer.
Like, so put down the answer key and tell me from you.
Exactly. And I was like, well, no.
For context, this was at the time where like I had been questioning things for a couple of years, but only in my head, and didn't feel like.
Was it really a couple of years at that point? Because that was our first year of marriage.
Was it our first year?
Yeah. I was when I lived in Naomi.
It was definitely
at least a year. Get your facts straight, Travis.
It was definitely at least a year.
I was honestly asking because it definitely was our first year of marriage.
Yeah, where I'd been asking questions, and then it was just like having conversations with myself about it and not feeling like I could talk to anybody about it. But you, there was obviously signs, because I was not a half in, half out guy in that world.
Yeah.
Like I was a guy that was, I was always leading the way and pushing.
Well, I think that was the part that was really all it was. Because I feel like we didn't have any of the conversations other than the one that you told me that I told you I'd divorce you, apparently, which I don't remember that one at all.
Yeah.
But I think it was more of just like you stopped like praying for our meals with me, and you stopped like where
I was no longer leading. The spiritual journey.
Then do I have to take that on? Like then I have to be the spiritual leader now? So then I tried to, but then I was like, but also I don't know any of the reasons why I'm doing any of this. So then let's watch Case for Christ.
So she was like, I got you these, you know, movies or whatever to watch. And I was just like, okay, like I'll watch them, but also I need you to tell me why.
Yeah. Like, and I was like, rather but I don't
than just
have
referring
answers,
me
just,
out to another source, you know,
they'll give you the answers. And that was really the first, like, I just like feel like the little like bug in my ear, like it was the first like starts. Cause I still went to church obviously for years after that.
Yeah.
But it was just,
I went with you for a while.
That didn't stop certain, it. It was just, that was like what started it for me. It was just like, okay, you don't have the answer.
Certain things that I started budging on or that I started moving on where I was like, realizing like that some of these things were based in tradition. Like I was like, wait, we go to church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. That's not in the Bible. Where did that come from? It was like, oh, Lee Robertson said three to thrive in like 1954. Yeah. So every IFB pastor's like, of course you're supposed to come to church every time the doors are open. So like Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, plus we got missions conference, leadership conference, youth conference, winter retreat and everything else. Like, so you got to be here every time, you know, we do something. And it was just like, that was one of those times where I was like, I don't know if this makes complete sense to me. And then we were in Fresno. She was on staff, so she had to go to the night service. And I remember this one time. I was like watching, I think I was watching football in like my boxers on the couch, and it was a Sunday afternoon. And then she was like, all right, you ready to go to church? And I was like, do I look like I'm ready to go to church?
I love you're such a stereotype of the husband. Like, I was watching sports in my boxers, cracking a beer, and she tried to drag me.
I was not drinking beer, to be clear. Sorry, this was before beer.
Thinking I need a beer.
Thinking, what would it be like to drink a beer? And so I was like, I reluctantly just like turn the TV off. I throw on like a polo and some jeans, which was already like, you know,
pushing past the boundaries.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
No, you know, didn't put a shirt and tie back on. And I show up to church that night, and then like 5 minutes in, they call a nursery workers meeting for the Sunday night service. So she leaves, and I'm sitting, and there's probably 25 people that remained
in the 300 person auditorium
that like remained in the service, and the rest of the people were out. And the pastor went with the nursery workers, and they had this big, you know, meeting or whatever that they were doing about nursery. And then they had, he's a very nice guy, but he was the church janitor. They had him get up and do a message on like being a servant leader, because he was, he'd been he cleaned the church for like 25 years. Again, really nice guy, but boring as shit, like so boring. And for the first time since college, and because I was so super busy in college, I used to fall asleep in services all the time. For the first time I fell asleep. Like I whenever I would do it, so I didn't like do that thing where you like your head falls and you jerk it back up and you have whiplash from falling asleep during service. I learned to just like put my arm on my leg and just rest my head here, and then I could fall asleep without doing that. And as soon as I woke up, I looked around, I had like drool coming down my mouth. I had no idea what was going on, sitting in this boring service. She's not even next to me. And I was like, why the fuck am I here? This is so dumb. Like, this does not make any sense. And I think I told her that night, or maybe just the next week, I was like, I'm not doing Sunday night anymore.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm not going to do, like, I was like, I just realized that the only reason I was there was just to check the boxes and to keep up pretense with everybody was there, because they were going to wonder what I was doing if I didn't go to church that night.
Yeah.
That's the only reason I was there. I was like, that is not a good enough reason to be here.
Sure.
And then she started going, she had to go, cause she was on staff.
Yeah.
But then also, you know, that was kind of where where we started having some issues with that stuff for a little while.
Yeah.
But yeah, experience that made me start questioning. I think it was really just leaving the bubble I grew up in, because I know we all kind of had different experiences, and all of our experiences were unique in different ways. Mine was unique in just the fact that I like that place was my home for my entire, like, since I can remember.
As opposed to us, how's that different?
Well, it's different because
I moved around. Eric didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you also didn't go to college.
Yes, I know I didn't go to college, Travis. You always remind me.
That makes a difference. I'm saying, like,
okay, you're right.
Like,
I know. I'm just saying, like,
basically just being because you graduated kindergarten, eighth grade, high school, and college all on the same campus.
Yeah. You had an extra 4 years. You're better than me.
And I started, you know, when I was three, which is like before you can really remember things. You know what I mean? So it's.
I was in the womb in the pew.
My point is.
Tell us about your unique experience. I'm just kidding. I'm sorry. I'm such a dick. I'm sorry. I get what you're saying. You went to all the way to college. You met your wife in that environment, which is totally different than
I'm
me.
Saying that, like,
I didn't meet my wife in that close environment. So very different. Go ahead.
Basically, he's better than you.
Yeah. Even in deconstruction, you're way ahead of me.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just kidding.
I don't understand how we're even here. Just, the facts are the facts. It's
can I just say that little side note on this? I do just appreciate that me and Eric can make fun of you, because I feel like in most other situations, because
when you make fun of us, we get really upset.
Me,
so we
so
like that
you
you're
two make fun
back.
Of me. We can make fun of you.
I've it's never great. Made fun of you.
That's a lie. Anyways,
okay. Sorry. Go ahead, Travis.
Please go ahead.
I would really enjoy to finish this thought. My unique experience was that I never left Lancaster, and I was only there from 3 till 21, and like from a kid all the way to an adult, and then got married there and then graduated there, and then like everything was there. And so the first time I ever left was when I went to Fresno, and then everything changed in a matter of a few weeks, because like not only was I in a completely different city where I didn't know anybody, but I was in a different church where I didn't know anybody, and then I was didn't. What is
No. It's just funny because
I'm trying to keep going with whispering and laughing the whole time.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead with what?
I'll slack you, Jackie. Don't worry. All right, I'm just kidding. No, it was just funny. It's funny because it was so similar to my story. It's same amount of time, and then Fresno was the first time away from it. Okay, hey, let's reground. We love you, we appreciate you.
People. And then I met people that didn't believe the same thing, and that changed what I thought.
Don't do that.
That's it. That's the whole thing.
Don't do that.
That's
That's
the whole experience.
So I was 0 to 18, which is the same amount of time as 3 to
except 23. It's not the same period of time, because you didn't become an adult there.
Well, it was really just like, I felt like it was the...
Technically, I graduated 18.
So wasn't like the group of people who were hanging out.
No,
like,
you're right.
Christians,
you're right.
Basically, like, it was the biggest reason.
Yep.
Sobbed. I'm just kidding.
That was it. That was the whole thing.
Oh my God. Now I feel bad.
Tell us again. I'm not going to start that from the very beginning.
Okay.
That was while that was all okay, I was saying.
I started working
in the secular world and met people that changed what I believed, because they were actually good people and I didn't think that was possible.
Do you feel like they're actually good people now though?
Oh, that's an interesting layer.
Yeah.
I was honestly curious about that. Yeah. I thought about that now.
He's got so much rage right now. Yeah. I feel like I'm going to start saying,
all right, your turn.
Your turn, bitch. You can make it good. I relate to so much of what you said, because it's the same as mine.
I know. 1/20th the size
see,
of my
like,
church.
But see, okay, but this is what's funny. This is what's funny, though, is we all do this. Jackie, sex goddess, you're like, you always are like, I went to like the biggest of the IFP churches. Like we all do.
I did.
I know, but I'm saying we all do the thing where it's like, but ours was the best.
I didn't say it was the best.
How does a sex goddess make me the best?
What's better than that?
Well, I've never said I am a sex goddess.
Well, that's a fair question.
Like,
I've never said I'm a sex goddess.
It does not imply the best. It just implies different.
I know. Okay. We had
different experiences.
We had different, but same.
Like, you would come to our church to do stuff. We never went to your church.
Yeah.
I've never been inside of Banning.
You guys weren't good enough to come to ours. All right, anyway.
Your school was the school where I would play in seventh grade because your team was that terrible.
You practiced. You practiced with ours.
We went to Banning, didn't we, and played at Banning?
Oh. We played at their gym, but not. I never went inside their church.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay. Okay, anyway. All right, we love you. This is our last episode of this show.
I'm saying like you got the ability to travel and go see different places.
You're right.
And like,
you're right.
Ours was a hub. So you're right. I just stayed there all
you're
the
right.
time.
That is true. Point. That is actually, you said it right now is that you were in such a bubble where it's like your conferences were at your church. You didn't go to other churches.
Yes.
You didn't even see other churches in the bubble.
Correct.
That's really is unique.
Only
that must have been really difficult. That is really unique.
It wasn't about being difficult or more difficult. It was just a thing.
It's
just,
unique. It is unique. That's unique.
I fucking hate you so much.
Okay. No, I do. I didn't even consider, because at first I thought you're just being like, oh, mine was different, but it really was because you didn't even go to other churches in the bubble.
That
if you'd
point.
Said that, that would have been really interesting. So anyway, so no, for me, the first thing that made me question, I mean, I've talked about this so much.
Travis, he's a terrible influence.
Yeah, it was Travis.
Let's just make that clear right now. Travis pulled both of us down.
No, the first thing that made me actually start questioning was literally that there was a guy that, I mean, sexually abused a girl at his church and then ended up at ours. And then I started researching and seeing like, oh, that shuffle happens a lot.
Yeah.
Which that was pretty much the first thing. It was like it was the biggest bubble burst you could have instantly. Yeah. And then it was like, well, if we do that, why are we talking crap on Catholics for doing
like,
that?
Like, what else do we get wrong?
Yeah. And it was like, basically, I've said before.
Slippery slope, Eric.
It's one of those things where being taught to be black and white was helpful in that situation. At some point, I'd like to do some kind of podcast on that. But like all the teachings that have benefited us later. And it's like the black and white thinking, the standing up for what's right, even when it's unpopular, like all that kind of stuff really just flooded in where it's like, this is clearly black and white wrong. And it was. And it's unpopular to say that apparently in the environment I'm in. But I feel like I have to do that. So it was kind of like their own teaching kind of. Turned against them sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing that made me question the IFB specifically, if we go into like religion in general, which I think is question number five,
I think that's where it started.
Right. That started
like the IFB is where it started for all of us.
Right.
Where it was just like, that's why I tell her and tell people all the time is like, I feel like if I grew up like very kind of, you know, lukewarm evangelical Christian, where it's like, we go to church on Sundays sometimes. And like we're there on Easter and we say the things and pray before meals and like just like kind of what I would say was like Americanized Christian.
Yeah.
Where it's just like we just believe in everything and it's just kind of part of who we are and that's what we do. But like it doesn't affect like literally every aspect of your life like it did for us. Like I'm not even sure I would have ever like started asking.
There's no reason to question.
It was because we grew up that fundamentalist where things just didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And it forced you to ask questions. And once you started asking questions, you ask a little bit bigger questions and they're just kind of like, oh, well, like the more of this is beginning to unravel in front of me.
Yeah.
But number five, you were saying.
Number five is, how long did it take for you to go from, I believe this is the truth, to I absolutely don't believe that this is the truth? You know, and I think that's just toward just religion in general. Obviously we all started in the IFB because that's where we were. But I think then, I hate the word deconstruction for so many reasons, but it's like the colloquial term right now for that. Yeah. I think the deconstruction journey just it was like, you do this and then you start questioning this larger thing. And it's like where we have similarity in our very different stories is that but where we have similarity is that I went from a bubble at least in like even the place we went outside our bubble, we're just in a larger bubble of the movement. To then going to Fresno, it's crazy to me how different Fresno felt with how similar it was.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a good point, actually.
And the big difference to me, and this is kind of inside baseball for those that don't know that, but like it was just a less strict version of the IFB.
It was what we would call like the new IFB.
Yeah.
It was like younger pastors who didn't cling to these, like,
to be clear, different from like
checkbox standards.
The NIFB, Stephen Anderson world, like new in terms of like, it was heavily focused on actually kind of studying. It was focused more on like the gospel than just like performance. But I would say
relationship over religion type verbiage.
The thing stepping out of that realm was I felt like looking back now, which again, I'm very thankful for that period of time for so many reasons, because I wouldn't be anywhere without that framework. Yeah. I look back though, and I think I just kind of exchanged like the legalism of looking like something to, I felt like in that environment, especially like in like a small group setting, it was like you got merit based on how well you could articulate a theological concept. And it was like kind of an intellectual legalism where it's like, who can explain how powerful the gospel is the best way,
the most articulate,
and it's
funny,
manner.
I never thought like that.
And it's always like you'd be like, yeah, the gospel really changed my life, and then the next person in the lineup would be like, I just sit there thinking about the gospel. I'm in awe of this, you know. And it's like,
I'm just in awe of like how
stop
how
it
little I am.
But yeah, but it was like, it's like, how much of a worm can I be?
It becomes performative,
and it's like, okay. And so I look at that framework where it's like, so I go from question the IFB to then I'm like on this falling out of that tree. It's like you hit every branch of like, oh, it's a Reformed theology here, and I'm reading this systematic theology here, and like all these things and church history. And I think for me, like the biggest thing, if I'm giving a 10,000 foot view, it's like stepping out of that world, it was recognizing two main things. It was like, one, when I started really studying like where the Bible came from, and it was like, oh, we don't even have documents for some of this. Like, this is oral tradition transcribed. And then when you start going into like councils would assemble to determine what is canon of scripture and what's not, like it felt shaky, where it's like, so were those guys inspired or not? Or like, how do we trust that this guy got it right? And like,
was that the foundational doctrine,
right?
Is bibliology.
And then the other piece too is just, you know, again, stepping into the SBC, the IFB, like all these religious denominations have these horrific issues. And I think people get confused when I say this. I'm not saying that bad is not going to exist in a holy context, because there's bad people everywhere. But for me, I would just hear stuff like, we're new creatures. We're like biblical language. You're fully transformed. Your spirit's been renewed. You're this. And it's like, there should be some supernatural goodness that does not exist in any other context.
Yeah.
But I wasn't seeing anything superior to what you see in AA, Buddhism, Islam. Like, basically, I realized, and this is condensing years and years and years of this, I basically realized like the power of belief was changing people more than the object of belief.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it doesn't matter what you ascribe to. If you believe it, like a diet, if you do one diet consistently, you'll probably lose weight.
Yeah. Right.
If you believe in a higher purpose, whatever that is, you'll probably change your life.
Especially if it's coming from no systems at all, which is what most people are coming from. So that's why the conversion stories are so powerful. Yeah. It's like, I remember that being like one of the tenets of apologetics, was just like, you know, they'd go through all the regular ones, you know, like the morality argument and this principle and that principle. And then they would always end with like, plus Jesus changes lives and you can't fake that. And I was like, yeah. And then I would like go see people after they go to a Tony Robbins convention, mm-hmm. and their lives changed.
Yeah.
Literally changed.
Because you bought into a system.
Because because before they did nothing and now they do something, and they have a guide and a system of values to operate by. Just like Christians who convert, like lifelong Christians who never bought in, convert to Islam but follow the tenets of the faith, and it changes their life that way. Or like, any set of rules or values.
My kids and my wife, Sunday morning, the dad was just drinking on the couch.
Yeah.
And now he goes to church.
Right.
Yeah. That's a big transformation. But also you can get that from, he went to AA or he went to anger management, you know, whatever. Like, you're going to see it. And I don't want to downplay, like, that's the thing, right? Is like, there's so many great benefits to the organized side of it. It's like, but then you start digging deep and you're like, okay, when we say this is the only way,
correct,
then we start getting into some messy, messy territory.
Right, to say it's the truth.
Yeah.
And not just the way. Like a truth. It's like,
the life.
Now we're talking about, you know, like this is where you start losing people.
Right.
You know?
So in terms of losing religion, what do you miss the most? Like looking back, obviously there's so much that we retroactively go, even the stuff we liked was kind of weird. But what do you miss? Like, what do you feel nostalgic about? Jackie, it's not nylons. What would it be for you?
Just community. I feel like just giving you like a reason to get together however many times a week to see all your friends.
Yeah.
That community that it gives, like, which I think that like now with Cam starting kindergarten, I think I'll feel that a little bit more, but I feel like you would, at least for me, like, I feel like I've had to be so intentional about making new friends and like what the looks, even like, I feel like the, probably like the most community I've had of anything has been the gym, but even the gym, it's like, you just like, hey, like you get to know people that way, but it's not actually like hanging out, spending time with people and our podcast. Yeah.
You feel just, you're like, I just wish I could spend time with friends talking about things.
Well, real friends, not co-hosts.
Eric, you're a real friend. I don't have headphones on. I don't know what you just did. But yeah, just the community.
Crickets
for sure.
Oh,
okay.
Just assume it's
crickets. That's
just
the only one I know where the button is. Off top of head.
Yeah, community is definitely a big one. Just to say something different, I would say I miss certainty. It's like I used to just be so certain about everything. And that's so comforting in a lot of ways to just to be certain that you know where you're going after you die. Even though nobody knows definitively where you're going after you die, because nobody's ever been able to come back and tell us what happens. Like,
there's a lot of books, 15 minutes in hell or 90 seconds in heaven or whatever.
They're all about heaven, which I find to be one of the, you know,
I still think
the most unbelievable things about it is like nobody's ever woken up just in a panic.
I still think that would be a funny sketch where it's like a group of people die.
I saw Satan,
and they all come back, and there's just one guy that's like, "Oh, you guys saw heaven, huh?"
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. I just always find it funny that nobody's ever died and gone to hell and come back. They're always like, "Saw this beautiful light."
And some of the people that
really, you went to heaven?
Some of the people that believe they're going to heaven the most are the people that I believe the least would ever go.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on any level of
like goodness.
Yeah.
But it's not based on your actions.
Like if anybody's going to heaven, you're going there the least of all of us.
But anyway,
Jackie.
Certainty. Yeah. Like certainty.
Rude, huh?
Sorry, I'm just kidding.
Certainty about everything though is like certainty about, I use that example just to say it as like, certainty about things that are like impossible to really be certain about.
Yeah.
But that level of certainty just gives you comfort and it makes you feel better. And that, you know, that's why I resonate so much. And I have empathy a lot for, you know, a lot of people that are like, man, I don't know how you go through life without believing in these things and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, it makes more sense to like believe in those things, but if you don't, you can't make yourself do it. And having the desire for something to be true doesn't make it more true. You know what I mean? So like, if that's what you're using as something to say that like this just makes sense why it exists, because if it didn't, you know, what else would we be thinking about? It's like, well, your desire for that additional purpose does not make it true, and it does especially doesn't make it true within that one particular narrow worldview that you adopt. I used to have certainty about everything. Just I was so sure I was right about so many things, which is I think one reason why I was pretty good at selling back then, because I think I'm much better at it now, but just in different ways. But before I just got so certain about anything that I would learn, and I could convince anybody of what I believed because of how just completely certain I was that I was totally right and they were wrong. So I miss having that certainty for sure.
Eric?
I mean, certainty is probably similar, but I'll say to twist the question a little bit, I think even up to like a week or two ago, I would have been like the spiritual like modalities, like having this like, oh, I know I can pray or we can sing together or we can like all those like spiritual steps you can do to feel like certainty or closeness or community. Like, but I think honestly, I don't really, the further out I am, the less I miss anything because there's nothing in it that can't be replaced easily in different ways. Like I was talking to someone this morning about, they were talking about like nature and like, they feel like the most connected to whatever God is in nature. And I was like, I feel very much the same way, like going out, taking a walk, like getting away from like any social construct of anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like even that, it's like that's become a spiritual modality. And I think I don't miss anything that's prescribed to me as like that, like meet at this time, like do this thing, like
the checklist.
Yeah. Stuff. Cause I do think the minute you start lassoing that figure into this construct, and I think that's why going outside, like for me, has been so big, is like even looking beyond buildings and like human, like hampering down like nature and like forming it into buildings and this, it's like, oh, there is something bigger here and you can actually be in awe.
Yeah.
And like, that was the biggest thing I felt like I missed for so long, was like having awe. And I feel like I've kind of reclaimed that from religion. So like, I think in another 2 years, I'll be like, I don't know this fucking thing. Yeah. Like, shit.
Well, and finding, I think there, that kind of goes in with the certainty thing. It's like kind of finding comfort in uncertainty.
You can be comfortable in the certainty that you don't have any.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, that's why I pulled out my phone. Cause there's just one, and it goes into the last thing here. What tools or resources do you recommend, to someone starting down this path? And so I'm going through a book right now called Awareness by Anthony DeMello. And the audiobook's great because it's basically just like, the book is essentially like a transcribed speech that he gave. But there's this one part in that I was listening to actually today that I wrote down. And it was not him that said it. It was somebody else that said the three ways to know God is, number one, his creation. Number two, his action through creation. And then number three, the highest form of knowing God is to know that you cannot know, because it is unknowable. It's kind of like what you're saying. Like, it, as soon as you start assigning all of these things, to, like a name to God, an attribute, and you try to start putting them in a box, which is basically all theology does, is when you cease to understand who God is, mm-hmm. and you know, how or whatever label you want to put on it. It's like that, it's unknowable. And there is a certain sense of security and comfort in just being okay with not knowing and just being in awe of everything around us, you know, and that's why, you know, one of the best ways, that's why I like to go for walks and I like to spend time out and just take in beautiful views and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Just because I think that fulfills that kind of spiritual practice for me. And then he finished up that thought, the chapter, after he said those three ways to know God, he finished up by saying, I heard about a fish in the ocean who was swimming around and said, hey there, I'm looking for the ocean. Can you tell me where I can find it? And he said, pathetic, isn't it? And that to me, like, sums up the human experience of, you know, the last 10,000 years of searching for of labeling gods, giving them names, trying to put them into this human box of understanding so that we can materialize this immaterial concept. And when we're really like, you know, who's God, and we're searching for who God is, and it's like, you're in it, like you are a part, like you don't have to search, it's here, it's everywhere around you, it's like all the experiences that you have, you know what I mean? I thought that was really helpful.
So
that's one of the tools that I recommend, one of the resources I'd recommend is Awareness by Anthony DeMello. A couple other ones, I would say anything from Mark Manson, really. I think he does a good job of, I would call him more like a modern day philosopher. I really enjoyed his books, both The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck as well as Everything is Fucked. And then his writing is really good. He has a good podcast. I think it's just The Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck podcast. Ryan Holiday does some good work on Stoic philosophy. But before you do anything with Ryan Holiday, if you're going to go down that path, I would still suggest going through like writings from Epictetus or the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius to kind of understand Stoic philosophy from when it was really beginning. And then Ryan Holiday, again, modern day philosopher, and just kind of breaks down a lot of the tenets of Stoicism. Let's see, The Four Agreements, since I had talked about that one earlier, I would throw that one in there. Zen and the Art of Happiness, I would throw that one in there. There's a few that I've read that have just been, you know, again, now that I'm out of that, just this kind of us for no more mentality of, you know, truth can only come from people inside of this world. I like to, you know, look around. So Zen and the Art of Happiness will kind of be a little bit more Buddhist. And then, Ryan Holiday or Marcus Aurelius would be more Stoicism. And then Mark Manson would be just more like practical philosophy. And he's kind of like an amalgamation of a lot of like Nietzsche and Kant and Socrates and some of these other people that he studied a lot when he started writing. It's a lot of that stuff that I've been enjoying going through. So there would be a few resources that I just mentioned would be good place to start.
Yeah. And I think in the show notes, I'll list out like two or three from each of us that are probably good starting points. But I mean, for me, I mean, Combating Cult Mind Control by Stephen Hassan, Corruptible by Dr. Brian Kloss, or actually, I mean, Dr. Brian Kloss's new book is really fantastic as well. I'm going through, which is called Fluke. I forget the subtitle of it, but it's a really, really good book in understanding why things happen the way that they do. But honestly, like, I think anything that teaches you how to ask questions better is going to be the most helpful resource. Yeah. But I'll list out some in the show notes.
And anything that would challenge your existing worldview. So like, if you grew up, you know, in Islam, then maybe some of the things that we're recommending for people that grew up in, you know, fundamentalist Christianity would be different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, even reading like Reza Aslan, Zealot, which is a book about the historical context of Jesus. So like what we know about Jesus through history, not from the Bible.
Right.
And then his other book, God, which is an exploration of, essentially a cultural shift from polytheism to monotheism and where the idea of God came from.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed both of those books as well. But again, that would be more for like anybody that's listening to this that grew up similar to how we grew up, fundamentalist or in Christianity, and have like Jesus and God as their worldview. I would recommend those books.
Yeah, but I do think there's crossover too. Like even Mark Manson, like Everything is Fucked, I think is good for anybody who's in any religious context.
Yes.
I think if you're going to read Subtle Art of Giving a Fuck, Subtle Art of Not Giving a Fuck, or Everything is Fucked, I'd recommend Everything is Fucked more for this type of audience.
Yeah.
I mean, I found it far more helpful personally, but I think context is everything. And then I think lastly, I think this show is probably going to be a good resource for people.
Well, I hope so. That's the intention.
They're like, no.
So Figure It Out Podcast, we're back. We're going to start releasing weekly episodes. Also, we're going to start dropping daily newsletters. So if you like the content that you hear on the show, the idea of the newsletters is that we're going to just try to pack in a question or a quote, a thought and a question that we're going to send to you every single day in your inbox that will just kind of get you thinking more along these lines more often. But the promise on the newsletter is that we're going to try to keep them as short as possible so that, you know, if something's daily, you don't want to have to read through a book every morning in your inbox to feel like you accomplished something. So the show here is always going to be long form. We're always going to have like long discussions about this type of stuff. But if you want these kind of quick hitting thoughts, questions, quotes, things that are going to make you think, then be sure to go to fiodaily.substack.com and you can subscribe there to get our daily newsletters that we'll be sending out. And some of the content will kind of overlap with what we're talking about on the show. You know, we'll send out something in the newsletter and then we'll expound on it on the show itself. So be sure to head over there and subscribe if that's the type of content you're looking for as well.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Peace out.
Catch you guys on the next one.
Thank you for listening to the Figuring It Out podcast. If you appreciated the content on the show, be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review, and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. For more information about the show, visit www.figuringitout.tv or connect with us anywhere on social media with the handle figuringitout.tv.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9, selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.